Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Two of the sport's most respected fighters step back into the octagon this weekend to compete for the welterweight title. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the UFC, is giving you a shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering new players a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. And don't forget about basketball and hockey, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs this weekend. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the week. That's promo code THPN to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit, eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more details.
This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
This is the Broadway Boys Podcast through the Hockey Podcast Network. We are back with Season 2, Episode 18. As Andy and I celebrate the Rangers for the first time, stringing together two wins in a row all season as we take down the Washington Capitals. But first, I got to ask Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, feeling good after about the Rangers right now. It is a snowy Super Bowl Sunday. I woke up early to get a pork shoulder in my slow cooker, dry rubbed it. I have all sorts of good things thrown in with it. And I'm going to make some delicious pulled pork nachos for tonight. Obviously, with COVID being what it is, my wife and I are watching the Super Bowl alone, but we're still going to have some yummy, delicious things to snack on while we watch the game. And I can't think of a better backdrop for a Super Bowl right now. But I'm doing good, feeling good about the Rangers and feeling good about that how they played the other night.
Now, I asked you yesterday, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but what kind of sauce are you doing? Now, do you do your own, or do you, buy something out of the store?
I have made my own barbecue sauce in the past, but my wife, being an entertainment journalist, gets lots of free swag.
Ooh.
And we received in the mail for the show Vikings, they sent us a whole bunch of sent her a whole bunch of stuff, including... We got free barbecue from a place local to us that does excellent barbecue. And they also sent us a bunch of stuff to do your own barbecue. So we got free dry rubs and free various barbecue sauces. So I usually can make my own throughout this process with the slow cooker, but I'm actually just going to use, they sent us I forget what it's called, but it's very nice barbecue sauce. So we're going to use that. And hopefully it's good. But like I said, it cuts down on time. It's free. I usually make my own rub, but they gave us a rub as well, and it tasted pretty good. So I'm going to go with that, and we're going to see what we have. And just made it really simple. The hardest part is just you buy the pork shoulder from wherever you get your meat, and you have to cut the skin off. And I had to cut it down a bit to get it to fit in my slow cooker because it was like a 10-pound, pork shoulder or whatever. But it works, and it's already starting to smell good in my kitchen.
Yeah, I can imagine. You're going to have to send me a picture of the final product when you're done.
Oh, I will.
All right.
I will.
So, the Sunday right now, we were supposed to play the New Jersey Devils yesterday. That got postponed. And I guess I can bring this up now. The NHL came out with an updated schedule. And obviously, the teams that were affected by COVID have the most changes. And Rangers play some of those teams, like the New Jersey Devils. So some of our games got switched around in mid-February and in March. There seems to be some, juggling of the game, so to speak. So I guess now that was just basically precautionary to not have teams playing three games in a row. I don't think there's a team is expected to play three games in a row. But I don't know if COVID, keeps up, and affects, another team, they might have to or push the season out further.
Yeah, and it's like you said, some teams have definitely gotten hit harder than others. The Rangers, knock on wood, have been pretty lucky. The only time we had Kako, but that was a precautionary thing. And because he was back so fast, you can imagine through contact tracing, they thought he might have been, and maybe it could have been a trainer or someone in the organization or a club, whoever he was staying with. But his test was clearly negative because he only sat for one game and was instantly back. So, yeah, the Rangers have been lucky. Much was made of Buffalo's coach Ralph Kruger because they played the Devils and apparently they had some people who they were already aware of, some people that had tested positive, and the league didn't cancel their game. And now I think Buffalo got hit with some cases, like I said, including their coach. So they were clearly very upset and angry, but this is a really difficult thing to deal with, and some teams have gotten hit harder than others. I think, you look at discrepancy in games played. Some teams have already played upwards of 10 plus games, and there's other teams that are still trailing along at like five or six. So yeah,
Vancouver's basically done with their season already. It's insane how many games they've gotten in.
And geez, they look bad, but that's another podcast.
They do look bad, but they got 14 games in already. So,
So that's not good for them. Like you said, you look with the schedule makers and they seem to have shifted every game back. And then I think the Rangers ultimately it adds up to them getting one game added for like a 1 p.m. game. Like I said, they have to work around the schedule of the Knicks if it's a home game or away game, depending on where they're playing or who's arena or barn. And if they share a team with either an NBA team or, like I said, the Rangers have been pretty lucky thus far, but you have to hope just the way things are going. I think the Kruger thing is definitely scary because it's one thing if you don't want your athletes getting it, but he's a bit, he's up there in age. He's an older guy. So you imagine he's more at risk. And that's ultimately what this is all about, is that these people in that bracket that could have underlying conditions who are at risk getting exposed. So hopefully they can lock it down. And I hope if just for whatever reason, the teams that have got hit, maybe they realize, okay, like we have to, maybe I was doing something and I wasn't being as careful as I thought. So, maybe change up the way I get groceries or if washing, how much I wash my hands or, whatever. So hopefully they figure it out.
Yeah. So just to update everyone, the game that was supposed to be for yesterday, February 6th, is now scheduled for Thursday, March 4th at 7 PM. So, that got pushed the next month and it seemed like all the other changes were games in the future really being pushed almost like one day. So, because if you move the one game, now you have to stagger them again. So it looks like all the games just kind of got pushed back a day, most of them for the New York Rangers. So Andy, let's talk about the Washington Capitals game, because for the first time in a couple seasons, I thought the Rangers put together a full 60-minute game. I thought they played well in every single zone on the ice, and they did exactly what they needed to do in order to take down the Washington Capitals. I mean, how pleased were you watching that game, from beginning to end?
Oh, I was so pleased because you had mentioned on our last podcast that this was going to be the real test for them, because the teams they've played so far, Buffalo, the Islanders, New Jersey. Yeah, they're most likely the teams along with the Rangers that were kind of penciled in for maybe the bottom half of that, whether or not one of them could get into that top four. That was the question, I think. But yeah, you knew Washington, the way they've been rolling and the amount of talent and skill and depth they have, that was going to be, and how heavy that team is, that was going to be the real test. But, I'll be damned, the Rangers were up to the task. their neutral zone defense was some of the best I've seen them play in years. And, you know, we don't know. It's hard to know if that's Jacques Martin's influence finally, or the fact that now that Tony is out of the bottom, that bottom pairing, you don't have to give him as many minutes. And you look at how much minutes Adam Fox played and Keandre and Trouba played, and then that third pairing of Beteto and Hayek only played 10 minutes. You know, when you can ride two pairs like that and just have a third pair that you just put out there for 10 minutes and just hope they just play solid and don't do anything, you know, too out of their wheelhouse. Although we're going to talk about that as well. Yeah, man, it just makes it easier. I think you are less, the less susceptible your team is to the ebbs and flows of maybe getting hemmed in a little bit on a shift or two here or there. It makes it easier for you to keep momentum and just keep rolling lines and doing what you're doing. And our forwards were attentive and swinging back on the back check to, you know, cut off the time and space for the person trying, you know, the capital trying to enter the zone, either forcing them to dump so that far side D can either try to get there for retrieval or, yeah, just forcing them to do something stupid or even just turning over the puck. And hell, I mean, Kako comes back. It was his, he was great off the puck. I had never seen him play that well defensively off the puck. So that was really heartening. He's winning foot races into the corner. He was coming back. He wasn't panicking in his own zone. He wasn't trying to do that rookie thing where he's like, I'm going to fly a little bit, so I'm the option, but that, you know, kind of leaves the guy who to walk from the wall towards the slot. So yeah, I was very pleased. Clearly Panarin and Strom are cooking again. The only two guys we're really waiting to get going right now are Mika and Lafreniere. You know, Mika still looks a little out of sorts, but he looked like he was trying. He was dangerous on the power play, and he's still, you know, he tries to back check. It just, he looks a half a step slow. And again, speculation abound. And, you know, Lafreniere, he's getting his chances. He's getting in, you know, he looks a little bit, I think he was not super noticeable that last game, but when he was, he, you know, little thing, subtle things that you, to keep possession, I really liked. And I think that's his whole thing, is that his game is so subtle that, you know, you can have a guy like Stützle stand out for his flash and dash, but then off the puck, he doesn't look like an NHL regular, whereas Lafreniere might be the opposite right now. But Lafreniere, I also found out, has, I think he's got like the fifth lowest PDO in the entire league. Like his shooting percentage is in the toilet, which means once it regresses, that he should, the points just start coming for him. You know, so he's just been super unlucky. And also he's playing with a guy who is either also A, super unlucky, or B, is just being clearly being affected. Because I think Mika only has like 2 or 3 points at this. I think he's got 3 points right now, which he's your top line center and you're staple to his side. So, you know, go figure. You know, and I think he's only got one at even strength. He's got a goal on a power play, and then he's got a pass to an empty net goal. So, you know, that's how his season's going. But wow, and I got off track. Anyway, yeah, they played great defensively, James. What did you notice about that, their effort?
Well, first off, I have to applaud Quinn, you know, when he does something right, because I get on his back, you know, every single podcast, it seems like, because I hate his coaching decisions or I just hate his inconsistency. And this one, he stuck true with what worked against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And if you look at the time on ice for the Pittsburgh game, and then you look at the time on ice for the Washington Capitals game, wow. Our defense, it's almost a mirror image of itself. It's almost exactly the same. You have the, you know, Trouba and Fox leading the way with 24 minutes and 26 minutes. And then you have, you know, the Lindgren and Keandre Miller in the low 20s. And then you have the other two just under 10 minutes. So Beteto and Hayek. So, I mean, it looks like he found something that's actually working. And, you know, it just sucks that we all have to pull our hair out for the first, you know, 10 games of the season for Quinn to realize, you know, hey, maybe this actually works. Maybe if I play my best players most of the game, that we'll actually have a positive result. Instead, he always constantly is benching people, sitting people. I know the Pittsburgh game was a little weird because Brendan Smith got hurt. I believe that was the first period of that game. So, you know, those other guys had to really step up and fill in that void. But, you know, it's just very nice to see that Quinn is recognizing a system that works, something that works, and, you know, was able to follow it up and have success with it the second game in a row. I thought Igor Annette was almost perfect. I mean, I don't know what you could expect more from him. I thought he saw every single puck. I thought he read it perfectly. The only hiccup that he had, you know, in the Pittsburgh game was that weird bounce off the glass. And then, you know, in this game, he was just near perfect. I didn't see him really chasing any pucks like he did that first game.
There's really nothing he could have done on that Hagelin goal. It goes off the guy's glove, like what he's supposed to do at the last second. So he couldn't do anything about that. You know, and then again, they cash in, I think, what, close to the side of the net. It was another thing that it was like a kind of a bit of a bang-bang play. So not too much you could do. But like you said, he made in that first minute of the game, I think Malkin had a chance just bearing in on him. He breaks through our defenders. And I think Igor stones him twice, like up front. He has two quick, you know, shoots a leg out, pad save, stays big, stays square. You know, he's in his butterfly and then has two quick saves in succession. And yeah, I think it really helped settle him and set the tone once he, you know, he's like, all right, that was probably the best chance they might get on our doorstep all night. And he was just, yeah, he saw everything. Even through screens, he was finding it with his glove, you know, whereas early in the season, his glove wasn't really doing him many favors. But yeah, he was snaring things down and he looked calm. And that's the Igor I know. And then gets a much deserved win. And yeah, I think it just settles everyone down. I think that's the biggest thing. They look settled. They never looked rattled. You know, even when that horrendous, you know, Kako gets called for embellishment on a knee on knee.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I was furious. And goes down. I didn't see much change in the Rangers' posture. And yeah, I think that's the other thing is that Washington, when they were behind, they started kind of trying to bully the Rangers play. They're a bit bigger, older, probably bigger team, although I'd argue they're a bit slower. But yeah, you know, Wilson was going around trying to do some damage. Although Lindegren and him were going at it all game, which you'd love to see from Lindegren. That kid is a warrior, say what you will about him. But yeah, the Rangers, look, they stood up for themselves. They just kept playing their game. Washington, you clearly look frustrated. You know, you could even see Ovechkin was frustrated, although you see why he's, you know, in that game that he scored that goal right off the faceoff. Not much you can do about it. He's the best pure goal scorer of all time, arguably, you know, just, and you could see he was wanting it all game and he had the most shots on ice for any team. So that just goes to show you how scary that guy is. But listen, you could even see he was frustrated, even despite even getting the goal. He was just trying to get stuff. And yeah, the Rangers didn't give the Capitals any time or space. They kind of like to play a little bit more methodically in the past under Trotz and Todd Reardon. And now I think Laviolette's trying to get them to play a little bit more up tempo. But you can see kind of from the construction of the team as it's kind of not their thing. So yeah, that made it possible for the Rangers to catch them in the neutral zone and slow them down. And that just made their life difficult because they couldn't. Yeah, they were kept to the perimeter when they were in their own zone. And like I said, through the neutral zone, it's like they couldn't have numbers or speed or anything because we were slowing them down.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
No. I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, listen, this Capitals team wants puck possession. They want to carry the puck, you know, into their offensive zone. They don't want to have to do the whole dump and chase game. And when you, you know, not really trap, but you force them to the outside, you take away time and space in a neutral zone, you force them to dump. And our Rangers defense, you know, we can gather that puck and make a simple play and get it out. You know, we're not making bad decisions back there. And it's, you know, very nice to see. You see, you know, Boteto and Hayek, you get a little nervous with them playing against an elite offense like the Washington Capitals. But even then, they kept their puck possession low. They made simple plays to get it out of the zone. You know, sometimes it's to nobody and it goes right back to the Caps. But, you know, overall, that's what you want. Just get the puck out of the zone and make them, you know, regroup and come at you again, you know. And again, that play is frustrating. You don't want to do that. Ovechkin doesn't want to have to go back out into the neutral zone, have a D-to-D swing through the neutral zone and have another puck entry. And he certainly doesn't want a dump in and have to go work for it into the corners. And you get a team, and this is what I said about the Washington Capitals prior to the season starting, is that, you know, their age, are they really going to want to play this style of hockey where, you know, the Rangers can keep up? But the Capitals are not going to want to play that gritty, you know, game in the corner right now. They, you know, they're an older team. I know they're a heavy hitting team, but you know, day in and day out, that it's a tough game to play. You know, not many teams can do it, and you certainly don't want your team doing it that's a little bit older, and then expect them to be ready for the playoffs. So, you know, I thought the Rangers played exactly how they had to play in order to get 2 points, especially in regulation, and you know. Obviously, being the Rangers fan that I am, I'm sure you had the same feeling. And when Ovechkin scores that goal, you're like, oh, God, here we go. We're going to blow this. But they didn't. They played better. They They countered them, you know, for once, you know, watching the Rangers, you know, when something bad happened, we didn't just like give up and quit. We got better, you know, and that was such a, you know, pleasure to watch. And it was so pleasing to have that for once, you know, where you felt like, oh, damn, you know, we're fighting back. We're not getting sucker punched and then cowering into the corner. You know, we're hitting right back. So that was a pleasure to see. So what do you think of, the success the last two games? You really have to look at, you know, one player in particular, and that's, you know, Artemi Panarin. He's been, you know, red hot, probably, you know, one of the hottest players in the National Hockey League. And I think, you know, that has a lot to do with Strome's success as well, is that, you know, he can carry that line and produce so much for, you know, the players that he's playing with. So what do you think has been the big adjustment from Panarin at the first two games in the season and Panarin the last two games of the season so far?
Man, you know, with a player with as much skill as him, it's kind of hard, because I think what equates to success for him might not be the same thing that equates to success for everyone else. But yeah, I think with him, there was a lot of timing. You saw a lot of his passes were off. His vision is what makes his game go. The good thing is his skill set is so high in his skating ability, his mobility, but at the same time, you know, the way he sees the ice, just those cross feeds to keep possession moving, to find guys to hold up and hit a guy, a trailer that he's so known for, just to take it around the boards. Take it up the boards and then quickly slam on the brakes, you know, double clutch, pump fake, use his body language, and then hit a trailer coming in for a grade A chance in the slot. I mean, that's, you know, his bread and butter. And when you have Strome finally, figuring out how he was playing with Panarin last year, doing more of that, just making himself an option. Panarin can hit him, and Strome is actually, you know, for a smaller guy, Strome can pretty much hold on to the puck in the slot and then protect it long enough for Panarin to then, they can kind of let him do the ladder play and let, they can stick and move. And that when they're doing that to great effect, it really helps them. And, you know, you really have to credit to Kako for a few times he made nice little plays that helped them regain possession, you know, on the goal, on the breakaway, you know, he's on his knees and he still is able to have the presence of mind. He can chip it on his, I think he chips it on his backhand around the guy who's in front of him to spring the two of them on a 2-on-1. And then, just a few times, you know, because Kako's never going to be I'm dumping in the corner, I'm going to, Jesper Fast, I'm going to dig it out and get it to you guys. It's just not who he is. But he can hold on to the puck now with more confidence from last year, maintain possession, and then he can play with those guys. You know, I don't think he's at the level of the other two yet, at least offensively, but you could just see that the more confidence he gets with the puck on his stick, that pretty soon, you know, he's going to feel like he's got all the time. He wants to do what he wants to do. And then, look out, everyone in the National Hockey League. So as far as Panarin going, I think the biggest thing is, I think he's got his timing back. You don't really know with the lack of training camp and all those other things. And, you know, especially coming into to play for the Rangers last year, you could definitely tell, we saw the videos of him training. I think he wanted to have a big debut, and, you know, he hit the ground running. And it's funny, because we almost were like, man, Panarin wasn't going at the beginning of the year, but when you're as skilled as he is, some of his worst games this year, like he had a 3-point game the last game, you know, and I didn't think he played all that well. He was okay. But, you know, if you can have such a pedestrian game and just casually have 3 points, I mean, that's pretty impressive, you know? And I think, how many games have we played now, the Rangers?
The Rangers have played 10 games.
He's got 15 points in 10 games. So he's already outpacing what he would have, if he keeps this up, he's already outpacing what he had last year. I don't think it ends up that way. And I mean, you look at, you know, I don't know if he's, you know, listen, McDavid and Draisaitl are just going to run away with it, just because the two of them nature of getting to play with one another. It is what it is, right? But you look, you know, Marner and JVR and these guys that Quinn Hughes are right ahead of them, they've all played like an extra four or five games. So I think it's going to shake out pretty much probably close to last year. Panarin's going to be at least top five in scoring, right? You know, just by the nature of how good he is. And you know, I mean, especially with the way they're riding that first power play unit. I mean,
well, I was just going to bring that up too. The power play unit is not even really producing that much. Imagine when that gets hot and that's going at, you know,
40. And it looks like they should be, because they're getting pucks are going off knobs, hitting posts, you know, but the thing is, when we have it, they're shooting the puck, we have shots on goal, and we're in our own zone the whole time. So it's not much more you can really do. Maybe you could argue it's becoming a little too predictable, and maybe by virtue of changing things up or getting those units mixed that with different styles, it kind of keeps the opponent guessing about what's going to happen. But at the same time, it's like, listen, you know, Panarin, I think he had a nice power play goal against not the last game, but the 2 games ago versus Pittsburgh, where we lost at home, where you know, he has a little give and go with Buchnevich for a one-timer, which was really nice. You know, Kreider's had some good tips. So yeah, once it's going, and once Zibanejad's going, I just think, I think the floodgates are going to open for our power play. Cause like you said, I think in terms of possession time and shots on goal on the power play, we got to be up there because we have the puck the whole time. Well, especially now you can ride Adam Fox on that. You know, not Tony was very, obviously a very good power play quarterback. That's his bread and butter, but you know, Fox has had so many nice plays with on the drift. He's so good at using faking with his body language and just kind of slowly drifting and getting a shot off, and he makes so many heady little chip plays to himself to keep possession or little reverses. It's just, you just shake your head and laugh when you watch him. It's just too easy. It's too, so much poise. I'm just like, I can't believe, you know, we got this guy for a second round pick. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, and
or 2 seconds, I should say.
Well, looking at the Rangers power play, I tweeted out, you know, the Rangers might have the best worst power play in the league, and it's like exactly true. It's like we don't produce any goals, but we absolutely dominate for 2 minutes. And I think you're exactly right when saying it's a little too, you know, predictable. I think there's got to be some sort of rotation on top, and I think that was more of like Tony D'Angelo's style when he was quarterback in that power play, is that he was willing to, you know, exchange roles with the winger and kind of play that, you know, offside if he had to. Fox seems to be very comfortable up top, and I like him at top, and he makes smart decisions when he's up there with the puck. And obviously, you know, his patience is just unbelievable. He gets the same feeling that I get the same feeling when McDonough had the puck, and you see him and you're like, what is he doing? What is he doing? What is he doing? And then he makes that move at the last second. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, thank God. Like, I thought you were going to cough that up and have a breakaway turn the other way. But, you know, I think there needs to be some sort of movement up top to kind of change the angle, break down their penalty kill, and, you know, get traffic and movement in front of the goalie's eyes, just to create more time and space for each other and better shooting lanes and you know, try to catch that team off guard. I was almost talking like Anthony Boteto. But yeah, you know, it's just nice to see that the Rangers power play is working. You just want to see points, and again, man, Panarin, 10 games played, 15 points. That's with an ice-cold power play. If that thing gets hot for a few weeks at like 40, you know, 45%, and the Rangers are humming along, I mean, his points are going to just skyrocket even more. So, you know, it's almost going to be like the short squeeze with the GameStop. You know, his points are just going to go flying once that power play gets going. But, you know, obviously the play of the game we have to talk about. Anthony Boteto, his second game as a New York Ranger, playing at Madison Square Garden. He's already jacked up more. Takes the puck around the boards, makes a nifty little move to break to the middle, and you think he's done there. And then, you know, and then he goes for it. He goes for the front of the net. And at the last second, when he's running out of time and space, he has a nifty little backhand that, you know, sneaks past. Who's the goalie that was playing for the Washington?
It was Vanacek.
Yes, and sneaks past him, and for one of the prettiest goals, probably the prettiest goal all season long for the New York Rangers, if not, you know, the National Hockey League. I know there's been some nice ones, but this one, just coming from who it was, just the moment for him to score a goal like that at Madison Square Garden. I mean, it's magical. I mean, he said it himself. It was absolutely magical. So what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I jump out of my couch, off my couch, I should say. I'm very happy for him. It's well documented that he grew up a Rangers fan, loves the team. You know, I know you and I both know people who personally grew up with him, and how much he wants to be a Ranger. And yeah, I was just so happy to see you. And you saw how pumped the team was for him. You know, he gives a cheeky little, he kisses the gloves, gives a peace sign, and they were clearly happy for him. And, you know, he said it perfectly. He's like, you put the jersey on and magic things happen. So maybe it was a little bit of the magic from those Lady Liberty jerseys, which looked beautiful on the ice last night.
Oh my God, we didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. But, you know, Quinn was asked about it, says, like, he was even saying, what is he doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And then it was in the back of the net. And he's like, and then by the end of it, I liked what he was doing. But because, you know, it's something you don't expect to see from him. But I think that's the beauty of it, is that if he can, guys like him and Hayek, who, listen, obviously valuable parts of the team, but at the same time, you're not going to play him 20 minutes a night, but you give him 10 minutes and they can feel comfortable and not underwater and not afraid, especially if you're out there and for playing 15 plus minutes and maybe you get a bad matchup and Ovechkin, Backstrom, or Kuznetsov are on the ice and they pot one behind you, you're not going to have the confidence to do that. But if you've been able to stay even all game, yeah, maybe you're like, you know what, we're in the zone, time, no time like the present. Like, you know what I mean? So, man, I was happy for him. He, you know, it's funny, because we've had a couple of guys come home and say, wow, it's magic to play for the Rangers. But you can really tell that this is what he wanted. You know, he's so happy to be here. The look on his face said it all. And, oh, man, I was so happy for him.
I'm Mason Dixon, a Habs fan stuck in Leafs country, with my co-host Corey, a Southern beauty trapped deep in the bayous of Louisiana. With over 2,500 kilometers of separation, we've still managed to come together to give you Habs Nightly, your hub for Habs content.
While I don't know what a kilometer is, I do know Habs hockey. Don't let the 10-year age gap or distance fool you. We bleed blue, blanc, et rouge, and we're known to serve up hot takes along with our unique charm.
Join us every Monday and Thursday for hockey talk, ref rage, and your daily dose of Southern ignorance. Only on the Hockey Podcast Network.
Katie is the superior macaroni and cheese.
Get the fuck out of here. You put ketchup on your fucking macaroni, you nasty kid?
Yes, I fucking do.
This has been Habs Nightly. You guys have a great night.
I guess we got to talk about those Lady Liberty jerseys, because part of me was worried, if they lose this game, are the jerseys cursed for now on? But if anything, it looks like they went in the phone booth, they put the superhero outfit on, and man, they look beautiful. What'd you think about the jerseys?
Yeah, so I don't know if you haven't listened to our podcast where we went over all the reverse retro jerseys, the part where I spoke about, you know, the Rangers jersey, I didn't really like it at first. I didn't like how it looked, like, as someone walking down the street wearing the jersey. I thought it kind of looked plain and cheesy, and I just felt like they didn't put really any effort into it to make it pop. And we spoke about how, you know, as a original six team, they're afraid to take chances and be risky. And you know, we kind of wanted something, you know, new and different and not so plain. But man, oh man, they did look sharp. I'll admit, man, I was really concerned of how the weird stripe on the arm would look. But, you know, when you're wearing, you know, elbow pads and shoulder pads, it doesn't really, you know, it kind of pops. It works. It, you know, the logo looked sharp. The only thing I had to say was that it was a little fuzzy reading the nameplate and the numbers. I thought the gray and the font was fine. I thought the font was fine, but the gray of it didn't really make it stand out watching it on TV.
Yeah, no, I agree. That was probably my one thing. I think you had mentioned that maybe if they trimmed it with white, it'd pop a little bit more, make it easier to see. But yeah, I definitely, like you said, once you have the pants involved and the socks all together, it looks fresh. Because some of those jerseys, they look great when you put them on a kid, you know, wearing jeans and white trainers. But then on the ice, you're like, oh, these are a little busy. It's kind of a lot going on. But yeah, I mean, I think the simplicity helps, because the Rangers just kind of, they look, you know, it looks very different. I love the dark helmet, you know, the navy helmet to match, and the socks. And, you know, I thought they'd have different gloves. They didn't, but that's fine. It still looked, everyone looked great. And they, you could tell the team was kind of pumped to wear them, because they've kind of been, you know, they've been repping it for a while. And clearly they know that the fan base was clamoring for them to make their return. And now, yeah, hopefully, like I said, now they're hopefully they're sainted a little bit now. And when they, every time they wear, I think they're going to wear them against the Islanders. Am I correct in saying that?
They came out with a schedule. If you want to keep talking, I can try to pull up that schedule, but, yeah,
being long winded is what I do best, James. Don't worry about it. But yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing about the Lady Liberties and the reverse retros, especially, you know, I like you said, when we were reviewing it, a part of me missed, I'm like, we could be a little bit more going on and have a little bit more, you know, on the either trim on the bottom of it and or have different gloves or have different socks. But now when I look at it, I mean, a part of, especially compared to pictures of, you know, the original one, I think I like it cleaner, you know, but it's just funny how at first I thought on the ice it was going to look like a glorified practice jersey, kind of like the Detroit one, but it really didn't, you know, it just, the feel was different. And yeah, now they have a nice little thing in their back pocket where if they need to, maybe, you know, things aren't going the way they want, they say, don't worry, we got the Lady Liberties coming, we'll throw them on, and maybe it's a, yeah, feel a little bit more comfortable, especially if you remember what the last time, you know, the effort they put forth. But yeah, so I'm also curious. Oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I have the schedule here. So they are playing, they are going to be wearing them against the New York Islanders February 8th. They also will be wearing them February 28th against Boston. And then twice again in March against the Devils and Philly, and then another time in April against the New Jersey Devils. So, yeah, they're penciled in here for six more times, so the rest of the way, including tomorrow against the New York Islanders. So, yeah, no, they definitely look sharp, and you know, I don't know, what's the deal with, like, the playoffs? Like, can they wear, like, a reverse retro in the playoffs, or is that...
Yeah, I mean, didn't Carolina wear them in their thirds last year in the playoffs or something?
Did they?
Right?
Was that the Hartford jersey?
Not the Hartford jersey. They had that, I think it was, like, because it was their black jerseys.
Oh.
You know, because their home is just an all-red jersey, right?
Yeah.
But I think they wore their black jersey. I think it was like, I don't know if you have to get approval, or I have no idea what goes into the minutia of getting stuff like that approved, but I believe they did. So I think you can. I think it's just up at the discretion of, you know, as far as that goes, I can't see the Rangers. I don't know. For some reason, I can't see them doing that, but, you know, it'd be, like I said, it'd be really cool. You know, I think you had mentioned two games ago, you know, they're going into that third period and they needed to, you know, they were, or at the end of the first intermission of two, you know, against Pittsburgh, you mentioned, you know, if the Rangers are down after 20 minutes, it'd be nice if they came out with the Lady Liberties, you know, like
yeah.
Mighty Duck style. So, yeah, I don't know if you could do that if you're down a few games and you're like, we need to change things up. So let's put these jerseys on. But maybe you can. I honestly don't know. But it would be interesting, especially considering how much the fan base seems to love them. And like I said, they've been anointed. They, you know, what a debut for them, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you couldn't ask for a better... Honestly, that game against the Washington Capitals was the best I've seen them play in a 60-minute span in two seasons. It was just unbelievable. I didn't even feel like I was watching the New York Rangers. And, you know, I think you mentioned it towards the end of last podcast, basically, of our leaders stepping up and having to look themselves in the mirror and say, you know, what does it actually mean to be a leader on this team? What do I have to do? What kind of role do I have to play? You know, they haven't really been called out until, you know, this past week after the Tony incident where there was fighting in the locker room, because, you know, the fighting in the locker room didn't just end with, you know, Tony D'Angelo getting, you know, put on waivers. The discussion still continued to what kind of locker room is happening in New York. And, you know, does Quinn have control of it? Do the players have control of it? You know, why do I hear that Trouba is the liaison between the players and the coach? Like, where's Mika Zibanejad? Why is he so, like, you know, sad that, you know, oh my God, that Tony's gone, and you know, is he going to step up and address, you know, the bigger picture here of, you know, Rangers have to get the ship, you know, on the right course in order to make the playoffs and gain some points here. Although I don't see a ton of stuff from, you know, Mika and that, it just seems like that the Rangers play overall has gotten better. And, you know, I'm glad that it's fixed, but it's, you know, it sucks that it has to come off the tail of a really bad 48 hours where players are fighting in the locker room. The team can't put together, you know, 60 minutes of hockey. They've had, you know, countless blown leads. They have questionable decision making, you know, behind the bench. It's just like everyone looked like they had to look themselves in the mirror and say, you know, is my decision making this team better? Is my play making this team better? And, you know, hopefully they all did that and they seemed, you know, it seemed to work.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of those things where I look at some of the teams that have been bad for a bit and then all of a sudden seemingly good overnight. And usually those teams have these Cinderella runs, but it ultimately doesn't equate to a Stanley Cup for them. But then I look at some of the teams that had a rough couple of years, but then through that, they kind of, you know, those young cores kind of figure out what they have to do through adversity. You know, I think it's the biggest, you know, it sucks because it equates to like wasted season, you know, or a season down the tubes, but you learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about what you need to do to get to that next level. And, you know, even though on the one hand, this rebuild hasn't been, you know, at least in terms of, you know, team morale, the rebuild hasn't been too sapping for the Rangers, but it has been tough. You know, I think they realize what, you know, when you lose a Ryan McDonagh and you lose a Derek Stepan and you lose a Dan Girardi or a Mark Stahl, you know, you lose these guys or Carl Hagelin as a penalty killer or Jesper Fast, you kind of realized what all of a sudden becomes glaringly obvious what the team is missing and what you took for granted, what you didn't have to worry about. And as much as it hurts to lose those guys, now you see Buchnevich as one of our best overall players, as an excellent penalty killer, smart, pressuring the puck all over the ice, Kako playing off the ice. And I think that's kind of the silver lining, but it kind of takes the adversity and the hardship of realizing, oh, we don't have that anymore. Like, I have to do that now. You know, it's now it falls upon me to make sure that, you know, where this area is attended to. And yeah, it's definitely a slower climb, but I think the most heartening thing I can say about this Rangers team, you know, especially if you look at some other teams, you know, we spoke about the Canucks, they already seem like their season is in a free fall and they have no signs of getting out. Even if the Rangers can't just crawl out of this hole they've made for themselves, it does seem that they were playing good early on, but they just were making stupid mistakes or just rookie mistakes, you could say. You know, they're still one of the youngest teams in the league and weren't getting good goaltending, but they were still playing well at 5-on-5, arguably. And now you look that it's one of those things that you just have to trust that as long as you continue to try to do those things and play the right way, you know, or push and just not take your foot off the gas, you know, the results will come. And I think when you're playing like that, but you're not confident, you're going to get those results, even if you're behind a goal or two, or you're down, or your power play is not clicking, or every time you press and, you know, you have most of the zone time, but everything in your own zone, even if it's a short time, ends up at the back of your net. Yeah, it can be disheartening, but I think we saw that they didn't let it, when you don't let those things waver and you play like you did last night, you're going to most likely be a playoff team and you're going to have success. So yeah, it's just funny how that works out. But yeah, I mean, there's a tantalizing amount of potential in this team, but you know, I think the management, fan base, the team included, all had them, yeah, maybe their sights set maybe a little too high, and we should all take maybe what Quinn acquiesced about Kako is everyone's waiting for it to be, you know, these kids, you know, him and Lafreniere to be what you want them to be, but you just kind of have to be what you are. So, and I think that's what they're doing. I think the more they realize that they're not a fully formed product yet is the more they're going to maybe harp on trying to do the things that will make them successful now and then grow into that. You know what I mean? As opposed to trying to make Kako a offensive zone possession player tomorrow. Yeah, maybe he does have to be kind of an NHL regular type player who can, with, you know, with special gifts for now, you know, same thing with Lafreniere.
Yeah. And listen, it's hard to dominate this league. Like you can't just come in and those players. I think we've talked about this before that, you know, the Austin Matthews, the Connor McDavids, the Sidney Crosbys, like there's so few. It's not like every team that drafts first overall gets a player like that. I mean, look at Edmonton, the Edmonton Oilers. Besides Connor McDavid, their first overall picks are not all Connor McDavids. Like those guys don't always exist there. And, you know, Kako taken at 2 and Lafreniere taken at 1, you know, people look around the league and say, well, why aren't they doing what they did? And it's like, it doesn't always work like that. You know, Connor McDavid is, you know, generational, maybe the best player to ever, the best complete player to ever put on a pair of hockey skates. Like, that doesn't exist every single draft. So I think people just need to calm down. If you look at Lafreniere's play, it's really not bad. It's not like he doesn't belong out there. It's just that, you know, he's just not dominating. He's making correct decisions. He's, you know, he's good with the puck. He's making passes tape to tape. It's not like, you know, he's a complete bust. It's just that, you know, it takes time. It takes, you know, repetitions. It, you know, he hasn't been tested like this ever in his life. This is literally the best, you know, hockey in the entire world. And when you have a player that's completely dominated and was able to do whatever the hell he wanted at will, you know, at every level growing up, when he gets to the big boys, you know, he's got to kind of relearn his game and kind of figure out what he needs to do to be successful at this level. And, you know, that just takes time. And to sit here and look at him and say he's a bust and, you know, oh, we should have drafted so-and-so, or we should have taken Byfield, you know, at least he's a big center. It's just like, calm down. It's all these young kids need to figure it out. And I think we're going to hit an era where we're not going to have that first round, the first overall pick or the top three picks are just dominating year one. They're going to take a couple years to get used to, you know. It's just, it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do. And we were kind of spoiled having, you know, a plethora of players taken at the top of that draft and come into the league and just dominate. And now people expect it to happen every single year. So I thought that was an excellent point that you made a couple days ago to me. I think, I don't even know if we were talking on the podcast, but I think it was just one-on-one talking.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like every year, some of the guys, especially, you remember Connor McDavid didn't win he got injured towards the end of the season, but, you know, Panarin won the Calder as a 24, 25-year-old, right? You know, and that's...
Yeah.
And McDavid was still good, but at the same time, even he had stuff to learn about. And I mean, Matthew Barzell's best season was his rookie year. He had 633 points, and then he was, you know, a 40-point guy the following two. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things. It's just these things are, these guys aren't cementing what they are going to be in their first year. You know, it's just, yeah, some guys are kind of get lucky. They maybe their skill set, especially if they've got wheels to burn, they can flourish. They get put on a third line their rookie year and they just, you know, beat up on lesser competition. And then they're like, all right, you're clearly skilled. We put you in the top six. And all of a sudden they become, you know.
Now you're targeted. You know, yeah.
Exactly. You know, Matt Barzell will eventually get back there. He's too skilled not to, but, or hell, even surpass it. But, you know, the Mikko Rantanens and the Barkovs, these guys, especially, you know, guys that are like Kako and Lafreniere who aren't speedsters, but just play heavier games more, you know, based on using their size and skill within the offensive zone. Yeah, it's going to take them. It takes those guys usually a little bit longer because it's not about, especially because you can catch so many people off the rush. You look at Jack Hughes, you know, last year kept to the outside, but because he's got wheels and he can kind of get to the perimeter, he can find ways and slots to distribute the puck. You know, you have to wonder how does that equate to success in the postseason where we kind of see a reversal. So you don't know. And the same thing happened to Barzell, is that he's so good in the regular season, but he hasn't been able to crack success in the postseason yet, just because it's kind of where everyone's really tight and gapping up. They're going to say, you're not getting by me in the offensive zone. You know, you're not going to step around me. I'm going to be attentive to my gaps and that's it. I'm not letting you in the middle of the ice. And if you are, I'm going to make you pay. So that's where these heavier guys like a Kako or Lafreniere, you know, will eventually make their money, especially a guy like Lafreniere, who is just so good at making subtle little plays under pressure to either get pucks through lanes and slots and double clutches. And that's the thing. It's just, he plays a subtle game, but it's kind of, you realize, you see how he positions himself and how he sticks and moves. And yeah, you can tell that when he is confident going at full cylinder and he gets that, you know, maybe next year he just has that extra step that Kako has now. Can you imagine how dangerous that'll make him? Because he's,
I mean, even though this year, like,
yeah, that's the thing. And that's I, you know, say what you will about, you know, I'm so happy with what I'm seeing out of Kako now, but Lafreniere, even though he hasn't gotten the points that, or the goals that Kako had, Lafreniere now is better than Kako was last year. Absolutely. It just hasn't translated. You know what I mean?
And it's enough for Quinn to put him on the first line and consistently put him on the first line. And And, you know, playing with Mika right now is tough because Mika is not himself. The style of play that you're used to seeing Mika, you know, play with, you know, the speed down the middle, you know, driving offense, creating scoring chances, his movement off the board, his, you know, spin off the defenseman in the corners. He's just was so electric everywhere on the ice. And right now he's battling himself. So, you know, to kind of judge the stats on a Mika's advantage at line right now is that would be foolish. I mean, it's just you can't say Lafreniere is a bust. It's just not a logical thing to say right now, especially because who he's playing with, the play at hand. I mean, you watch him. Is he really doing anything wrong out there? It's just that he's just not really producing like he has at every other level. And I think that just takes time to figure out. It's not fair to even judge him off his first 10 NHL games without a preseason, nonetheless, and a season where, let's be honest, man, besides the last two games, the Rangers were a hot mess up and down the entire lineup. And even behind the bench, the coaching decisions were bad. There was fighting in the locker room. We were blowing leads left and right. So his first five games in the NHL were not exactly, you know, a model to really start molding yourself around. And, you know, I think the last two games, you saw he's finally seeing what it takes for a team to be successful. And hopefully he can find a role and, you know, kind of work on the things that he feels he needs to work at to get better. And it's really nice that, you know, although we don't always like what Quinn's decision-making is, I'm really glad he's not taking him off the top line right away and allowing him to kind of, you know, figure things out, you know, with Mika.
I absolutely agree 100%. And yeah, I just think, like I had mentioned earlier, that both this team and these young guys, they're gonna, at the end of the day, they're on their own timetable, you know, and fans can wish cast all they want about because we have X, Y, and Z pieces where you should be. But everyone knows that the National Hockey League, the variance is crazy from year to year. Sometimes your goaltending is not good. You can't help it. Sometimes what was working last year just is not working this year. And yeah, it's a weird league like that. So you just have to make sure that you're trying to incrementally get better every day. And it's such a stock cliche David Quinn answer, but you know, it's kind of the truth, right? Because you look at, you know, it's just about that you apply it so much because it becomes second nature. You know, if you showed someone Buchnevich now and you were like, you would have assumed you're like, man, this guy, like, you would have, and you had no concept of what he was like before. You would think he was just like a two-way forward that kind of found his offensive game a bit, when he was the opposite. He was a skilled, you know, playmaker who just had to have benchings by Quinn and, you know, conversations about effort and consistency. And this guy is probably our best two-way forward right now, which is crazy to think, but it's true. You know, it's funny how that goes, but it just takes a while to get there. And if anything, this kind of these hardships and, like, you know, it's one of those things where if you can drum into this team that already has natural skill that will flourish once they're all mature and they're comfortable. But this is how you have to play to have success, not just in the regular season, but in the postseason, you know, not just trying to stretch the ice all the time, like under AV, not just, you know, Quinn calls them hero plays where you don't have to move your feet. That's the thing where it allows you to have the puck all the time, like Tampa, because that team skates. You know, I don't care how old they are. They have a good mixture of old and young guys and they skate. They have the puck all the time. They're smart with it. They don't take too many games off, you know what I mean? And they're successful. And there are, you know, them and Colorado now, who kind of remind me of the Rangers only a few years ahead of us. Yeah, that's, you know, that's the biggest thing, is that it's not, they dominate with skill, but they just, the whole team is moving in concert and they're attentive to their duties. And then, yeah, and then once you're there, you have all the time and space to use all that natural skill you have you want. So,
I got a couple questions for you.
Yeah, sure. Let's hear it.
So, you know, obviously we're going to have to face these questions eventually. And I want to get your thoughts before, you know, the people in charge are actually making answering them. So we have some injuries, right? When certain players come back, where do you see them getting penciled in? And I'm looking at Jack Johnson specifically.
Well, I would hope Jack Johnson doesn't get penciled back in. Okay. Rangers are practicing as we record. I know Brendan Smith is in a non-contact jersey, I think. So he's probably the closest. Johnson's not on the ice. Hedel's not on the ice, and Blackwell's not on the ice. Like I said, no matter what, if they're going to play Jack Johnson, you got to hope they keep those minutes down because. Do they like what they saw out of Hayek? Betetto, is he making them rethink whether or not he should be that, because he's a veteran in his own right. He's 30 yeah. years old, right? So, is he able to hold that spot down with the goodwill and faith and, especially if he can chip in some goals where, you're not getting anything for Jack Johnson. So, you got to hope he's holding that spot down eventually. And I guess if there's an injury, Smith can go in, especially because he's versatile with his handedness and all that. With what side you play him on. Eventually you hope Hedel gets back. He takes that third line center spot. And Blackwell, maybe he's on that. He gets put right on Hedel's on wing. And I think you hope you can ride, Lafreniere, Mika, Buchnevich, Kako, Panarin, Strom, Kreider, Hedel, Colin Blackwell, and then you have that fourth line of DiGiuseppe, Lemieux, and Brett Howden. And I think in a perfect world, that's kind of what you want. Julien Gauthier, I'm sure, will be in and out, but still, he has tantalizing skill.
Rooney is making the case that he deserves to play
every single- And I think, Gorton deserves a lot of credit for that because some of our best contributors this season have been our bottom six guys. Complete opposite of what we had going last year where our bottom six was invisible. So, and all at the cost of under what, I think all of them together maybe make
an average
$2 million, maybe. Yeah. So, which is great. So that's what you want. You need, especially the way Colin Blackwell is going. I don't know if he comes back from injury. He was just riding a hot streak trying to prove something. But that bodes well for the Rangers, right? Just makes a matchup nightmare. And those guys are, say what you will about. I think last year we got in trouble at times because you love the effort of DiGiuseppe and Blackwell. And then you're like, we're going to put him on next to Mika because I want to show this guy what you have to do to really have success. And I get it. But at the end of the day, you want these guys. Like the Islanders have their Cizikas, Martin, Clutterbuck line, although that line gets, is not what it once was and gets caved in on shots every night, although they look maybe good doing it. But, that's what you want. It's like if you can have those guys, whenever you put your bottom two lines out, whether it's Hedel, Kreider, and Blackwell, and then the guys I mentioned, that it's a rough ride and they're pressing. It's uncomfortable and they're chipping in greasy goals. And then you kind of attune to that, and then your top lines come out and just decimate you with their skill. That's really what you want. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think, I think the good thing is even with the Tony business and everything that's been going on, I think the picture is getting a little bit more clear. We see now Gauthier has a ways to go. His awareness in his own zone is still kind of non-existent, but there is tantalizing skill. But obviously, as we get closer to the end of the season and the expansion draft looming, we're going to have these hard conversations, and that'll be a different podcast. But as it stands today, the on-ice picture at least looks clear. It sees Vince is reporting that the lines from practice remain unchanged. The only thing we don't know is who starts a net versus the Islanders. So I think that's a good way to finish this podcast, James.
Yep.
If you're who are you playing against the New York Islanders tomorrow night?
I think you got to pencil Georgie in. Only because, and you brought it up at the last podcast, is his success against the Islanders has been, clear. He plays well against that team, and it's no knock on Igor. I'm sure they have group conversations and meetings together, but given his recent success and past success against the New York Islanders, I don't know how you don't put Georgie in these games. You have to play him eventually, and you got two games against the Bruins on Wednesday and Friday, and you're going to want to go with Igor. So are you really going to pencil Igor to play five games in a row in a 56, game schedule? So, I wouldn't, and this is a perfect opportunity for Georgie to play. So, I expect George George to get penciled in and Igor to get penciled in for Wednesday, Friday. You know, unless he really has a hell of a game Wednesday, where it could happen against the Boston Bruins. But you know, you're going to want to go out there with all cylinders going, and that's Igor's game on Wednesday.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like you said, I think it's one of those things where you still want to get Shesterkin the variety of the starts, but you do need to play Georgie. And especially if he's not feeling super confident, you know, he's had Quinn said, he's kind of had a pretty eventful week, right? You know, his play has been, hasn't been where he wants it to be. You know, he gets called out basically by a guy on his way out, which I'm sure still weighs on him even after, you know, the problem from the locker room is removed. But now it's like, yeah, I'm sure his confidence is shaken. He's got to get it back. So, and this is the best place for him to do it. He's had success before. He's been up to the task. And if he just inexplicably plays good against the Islanders, that's what you got to do. And then you can go back to Igor and, you know, but yeah,
And I want to say too, I not to cut you off, but you brought up an excellent point that George's best game is when he's, you know, kind of has his back against the wall and is almost forced to play that game. So, you know, I think with Igor's recent success and everyone kind of taking a deep breath and saying, wow, maybe Igor is back, you know, maybe Georgie sees that and, you know, says, shit, I need to elevate my game. I need to play better. I need to be more focused. I need to have my head straight. And, you know, I believe in Georgie. He's been Mr. Reliable as a backup goaltender during, you know, when we had Hank. I thought he played well last season. I think he figures it out, and I think he plays tomorrow, and I think he plays really well. I mean, he had a shutout against this team. I think it would do wonders for his confidence if he can get another game like that in under his belt and, you know, help the Rangers get 2 points, because ultimately that's what matters at the end of the day, is 2 points. So the Rangers desperately need them. They need to get, you know, back on track, and they need to continue that momentum. You know, I thought the game against Pittsburgh, you know, went seamlessly into the game against Washington, and that seamlessly needs to go into this game against the New York Islanders, because, you know, if you can string together a 10-game span where you go 8-2, and then, you know, the next 10 games, you know, even if you go 6-4, if you consistently, you know, string together those 10 segments, those 10-game segments where you have success and you're getting points, you're going to be a playoff team in this division, because I don't believe in Pittsburgh's consistency. You see what's happening to the Islanders. The Devils will cool off, trust me. They ain't shit. And, you know, I just think we sneak into the playoffs. I really do. If we can play like we have this last two games and keep that momentum going, Andy, we're going to make the playoffs.
Thank you for listening to the Broadway Boys Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Boys Pod, and please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, or thehockeypodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.